Well, good evening, everyone. How are we doing? Good to hear. Hope you guys are enjoying your week. It's a warm one today. Yeah, I heard we got a few more of those coming our way, too. So, okay, let's open in our Bibles to Psalm 78. We'll keep going on our study through Messianic prophecy, and we've found ourselves the last few weeks here in Psalms. Trying to, at least through the Psalms, where we're going to find quite a few messianic prophecies, trying to follow some general themes. You know, not that these themes are necessarily clearly lined out, but, you know, as we go through the life of Jesus, his death, his burial, his resurrection, things like that, you know, we'll try to group some of those Psalms together and cover some of those themes. So we've just been kind of covering some themes through here, through Psalms, picking out ones. It's been tough, you know, having to find ones that we can go through and leaving some out so we don't do this for the next 5 years. But we're going to work our way through Psalm 78, a couple verses here today for a little bit, and then head on over to Psalm 69 to wrap up this evening's study. So we should get through two messianic prophecies this evening. And let's get started here. Psalm 78, we're just going to read the first two verses. Listen, O my people, to my instruction. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable, and I will utter dark sayings of old. Okay, so I'll give you guys here in just a moment, put you on the spot, see if you can find for me where this is quoted in the New Testament. And, you know, if you get hung up, I'll give you a hint here. But for starters, this psalm is clearly messianic, as the Spirit quotes it in the Gospel of Matthew. I'm sure many of us just hearing, I will open my mouth in parables and utter dark sayings of old, remember hearing this as we read through the Gospels. So I thought in opening up tonight that we would ask you guys where we can find it in the New Testament. Does anybody know where this one's at? Yeah, that's right. So Justin says Matthew chapter 13, so let's head on over there. Okay, my hint was going to be, it's in the chapter in the Gospels that's full of parables. Okay, well, that's kind of fitting, because the prophecy in Psalm is that I would open my mouth in parables. And we find its fulfillment in Matthew chapter 13, which largely from the first verse to the last verse are parables, also largely parables of the kingdom. And so certainly not limited to Matthew 13, but we definitely find the majority of them here. And I guess for the sake of tonight, we'll just read 34 and 35. All these things Jesus spoke to the crowds in parables, and he did not speak to them without a parable. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet. I will open my mouth in parables, and I will utter things hidden since the foundation of the world. I failed before I came here tonight to find this verse. But if we do go back to Psalm 78 here, maybe some of us notice that this is a song of Asaph. A lot of the psalms being written by David, some attributed to Solomon, even others to Moses. But we have here a couple of them anyway, that are attributed to Asaph, a musically inclined guy, a Levite, a descendant of Korah. But so those are the verses I wanted to find, and I found them, and I forgot to write them down, but he is referred to as a prophet. And then that would make sense that his writings would be prophetic. But as we read there, and I turned away, but I'll find this real quick for you. As we read there in Matthew 13, when Matthew says this is fulfilled, he said that this was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet. So that lets us know that God considers Asaph a prophet. And so portions of what he wrote were going to be prophetic, as that would make sense. Asaph wrote the song, but these words are the words of Jesus. Now, if we weren't sure, Matthew kind of cleared that up for us. as in the middle of Jesus' teaching here, he makes it very clear that this fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet, and then he quotes this psalm. So the song's written by Asaph. He might not even understand the full significance of what he wrote, but don't be mistaken, these are the words of Jesus. To further illustrate this point, I want us to go back to Psalm 40, which was 2 weeks ago. So, we looked at verses 6 through 8 2 weeks ago, last week being the award ceremony. So in Psalm 40, verse 6, says, "Sacrifice and meal offering you have not desired." So, you know, we properly understood the "you" is capitalized. This is a reference to God. So, you know, we understand that a sacrifice and offering, you know, God has not desired. "My ears you have opened, burnt offering and sacrifice and sin offering you have not required." Okay, so who's this "my"? Whose ears were opened? Well, we went through this, and we know it's Jesus Christ. So again, we see a psalm of David, and David wrote the prayer, okay, but they are the words of Jesus. All right, just as we notice that here in the one that we looked at last week. Okay, "God, you have not desired, but my ears you have opened." Okay, who's speaking here? Well, the New Testament would have us know that it's Jesus. So just to further illustrate that point here from Psalm 78, these are the words of Jesus. And I think here is a good... Oh, Justin's got a comment here.
Okay, sorry. So in Psalm 78, it says, "I'll utter dark sayings of old." But, of course, Jesus says it, and you can kind of make that correlation, I guess. "I will utter hidden since the foundations of the world." Mm-hmm. Is that translational thing still?
So I think that's...
At first, it's dark sayings of old. Like, what? Like, dark sayings of old. Like, you know, it doesn't sound like they're very good sayings.
Yeah. So I think the translation comes through, and it comes through well. I do have this in my notes, but we'll touch on this for a moment here because you bring it up. And then maybe that'll help us just kind of skip over it when we get there. But, you know, when you first read through that, because, okay, you know, like outer darkness, the absence of light, you know, we would attribute dark as bad. But dark is also where, like, things are hidden, right? I don't know, I was looking at a bag of something in the garage the other day, and it said, "Keep in a cool, dark place." Okay, well, that bag found itself wedged in a corner where you don't really see it too often. Does that make sense? So that's the understanding of how this is going to come through and why that translation does that. And I don't think the Spirit's taking liberty here. I think it really just translates that way. If something's been hidden, it would make sense that it would be in a dark place. So when I read that, "I will utter dark sayings of old." Not like bad, you know, voodoo sayings, bad, dark, but just things that are hidden in darkness. And then Jesus being the light is going to reveal those and bring them to our understanding. So, okay. And so in this spot here, you know, it's just, I guess the thought is, once Paul and then once John, in the New Testament, in 2 Corinthians and in Revelation, make a reference to seeing or hearing things from the throne. And when they turn around and either try to pen these or regurgitate them, they're told no. And a lot of times, we're not given a specific reason. Sometimes it's just, you know, these are things that men aren't supposed to know. And I guess the thought I kind of have sometimes is, would we understand? Because you look at the magnitude that God has to go to communicate spiritual truths, right? I mean, take his whole physical creation, for example. I mean, that whole thing communicates God's invisible attributes, his divine nature, and his power, okay? Then you have one of the greatest things, okay, known in this life, the union of man and woman, and the family, okay? And those are created to communicate a higher spiritual concept. Okay, now we live those out down here on earth, but make no mistake, they were ordained and created by God so that we could understand spiritual truth. So, You know, there are things about God that are difficult to understand. Okay? I mean, Peter writes that in his second epistles. He's like the writings of Paul, you know, they're weighty and in some things hard to understand. Okay? So, you know, this stuff kind of trips my mind up every once in a while, but God really had Jesus and the church first. And then kind of working from that point forward and coming back, laid this all out. And he didn't do that because he thought it would be challenging. He did it because he knew that's the only way we could understand it. Kind of that whole, you know, you can lead a horse to water. What is the saying? You lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So, you know, God's trying to get us to understand these spiritual things. And this is going to tie into the parables. Because why did Jesus, now just think about it. Why did Jesus use parables? Now we'll cover that, but I want us thinking about it. Okay? There are spiritual things about God, His plan, the nature, and His Messiah that can be difficult to understand. I kind of wonder sometimes if John wasn't able to write the fullness of the things that he saw because we just flat out wouldn't get it. It says these things for mankind aren't supposed to know. Okay? So, the main point right now being is, you know, it's easy to say that God started with the church in Jesus Christ and then went back and wrote it from the back forward. It's easy to say that, but wrap your mind around it. Then you kind of go through these messianic prophecies and, you know, sections of them are clearly talking about Jesus, and then other sections of them would appear to be referring to the writer themselves. And so in here we see just a good reminder, okay? Asaph wrote the song, but these are the words of Jesus. Okay, well, in short, how can they... Okay, well, they're the words of Jesus because he's existed from the beginning. Okay, these things have already taken place. And so the prophets, through inspiration, through God, through their prophetic ministry, wrote these things down. Okay, so just a reminder, I guess... I think that makes sense. We can go to Colossians 2 just to kind of wrap this point up. Okay, Colossians 2, 16. He says, therefore, no one is to act as your judge in regard to food or drink or in respect to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath day. Things which are a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. So what we see here is a specific mention to the law and to its ordinances and its regulations. You know, we've got the Sabbath, which is directly in the law. Okay, that's commandment. But then the festivals and the new moons and the drink, okay, that's going to be found in the ordinances. And he says, yeah, nobody gets to act as your judge in these things because they were never the true substance of the real things. The substance of the real things, okay, well, they belong to Christ. So all of these things in the old, just to tie up this point, served as a foreshadow to the things that are true, which are the spiritual things. And then he even narrows it down for us more. And the substance of these things is Christ, which is going to tell you if it's the Sabbath. It foreshadows Christ, okay, and the rest that we find in Him. Okay, it's not Sunday. Now I don't know if you've searched this through, okay, but Sunday is not the New Testament Saturday Sabbath of the Old Testament. Okay, the fulfillment of the Sabbath, if it is a foreshadow of anything, because the Scripture says that it is a foreshadow of the rest that we enter in Christ Jesus. Okay. So main point here now is that all these things, they're just a mere shadow that's being cast on the true substance of things, and they all belong to Christ. So if it's food, if it's drink, if it's new moon, if it's festival, if it's the Sabbath, these things, they're all inherently pointing to Christ. Okay. And so we see that in Psalm 78. Okay. Asaph wrote it, but please understand, this is pointing to Jesus Christ. Now, what we want to look at here in Psalm 78, if we haven't turned back, in verse 1, I found this interesting, so I put the legwork into this. He says, listen, O my people, to my instruction. So now what you're going to see there, oh my people, is set off by commas on each side. Samantha, can I get some water? Thank you. So you see that oh my people is set off with commas. Now what that's telling you is that that is a noun of direct address. So if I said, Sam, go get me some water, please. I addressed her. She happens to be a person, so she's a noun, and she's the addressing. She is the addressed in the sentence. So when you do that in English, you always set them off with commas. Okay? You know, if you said, you know, John put his pickup in the ditch last winter, we don't have to set John off with commas because I'm not addressing him. I'm speaking about him. Do we understand the difference there? So this is going to be important. Can you come here, buddy? Dad needs that water. Everybody's looking at you, so don't be too shy. Thanks, buddy. Now, I put the legwork into this because as we look at the Psalms, God can be referring to his people. My people are without God. My people's aim is wrong. My people relied on this. My people did not remain faithful. But when God addresses his people in the Psalms, when he addresses them, and that, oh, my people Israel, is the noun of direct address in the sentence, it actually only happens a few times in the Psalms. And to my knowledge, it is always God addressing his people. So what does that tell us? Asaph is not addressing the people. God is. Okay? Examples of this that I was able to find, chapter 81. Again, limited my search to just the nature of the Psalms here. Chapter 81, let's start in verse 8. We're going to read 8 through 13. And we're going to see a couple instances of, oh, my people. So if you're looking at verse 8, you can already see, oh, my people, and it's set off with commas. So there's your noun of direct address. Those people are being spoken directly to. Now, when we read verses 8 through 13, it's going to become very clear who the speaker is. Hear, oh, my people, and I will admonish you. O Israel, if you would listen to me, let there be no strange god among you, nor shall you worship any foreign god. I, the Lord, am your God. There's no confusion about who's speaking here. Who brought you up from the land of Egypt, open your mouth wide, and I will fill it. But my people did not listen to my voice. So there, we see my people's not set off with commas because he's referring to them. He's referring about them. He's not directly addressing them. Okay, my people did not listen to my voice, and Israel did not obey me. So I gave them over to the stubbornness of their heart to walk in their own devices. Oh, that my people would listen to me, that Israel would walk in my ways. So wanted to see there in verse 8 where this phrase, oh, my people, is being addressed, and it's a noun of direct address. God is the one speaking to his people. Okay, chapter 50 of Psalms. And we'll read 7 through 11, same concept, just notice the addresses and the speaker here. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, I will testify against you. I am God, your God. I do not reprove you for your sacrifices, and your burnt offerings are continually before me. I shall take no young bull out of your house, nor male goats out of your folds, for every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird of the mountains and everything that moves in the field is mine. So just did a little extra legwork there to show us, you know, because I think I think we appreciate and understand the fact that God, and we'll read this verse in Matthew again later, that God had the church in mind when he founded the world. I mean, Jesus tells us that in Matthew. Okay, so that's not like a new thing for us to grasp. But, you know, it is an interesting thing how these things come about. Okay, that they have happened in the spiritual realm, and that they're being spoken of in a prophetic language. So just went through a little extra work here to show us. In Psalm 78, Asaph wrote it, but these are the words of Jesus. And he says, I will open my mouth. Okay, in verse 2 of Psalm 78. So before we jump into the parables, just this phrase, I will open my mouth. Now I thought this was really cool. I told you guys from the beginning I'd try to give you some of the Hebrew definitions and stuff. I don't know much about it other than what those who study Hebrew say and just try to go with the majority there. But what they describe this verb as is a cohortative verb. I thought, boy, that's a new word. You know, what does that mean? And so in the Hebrew, when you look up what this verb means, the definition you get, okay, we're talking about will open. Okay, my mouth. It expresses the speaker's desire, intention, self-encouragement, or determination. So any one of those kind of facilitating actions, desire, intention, self-encouragement. I will do this. Okay? Encouragement, intention, desire, self-encouragement, determination to perform an action. To perform an action. I will open my mouth. Okay? It is an action that's going to take place in the future. So again, we have Matthew. It tells us it's prophetic and that it's referring to the Messiah. But I found some extra things in here I just wanted to share with us. Even the way that this is written in the Psalm, it's talking about the future event. It's something that God wants to bring about in a future sense. Okay, I will open my mouth. And what it is he's going to do is open his mouth using parables. His intention is to explain the hidden things, the things of old. And I just think it's cool that God desires this. The hidden things, the things of old, the dark sayings. So I can skip that section because we talked about that for a second. Not only does the I will open my mouth, and you can see how that comes through in the English as a future, right? Will open. I will go to bed on time tonight. Okay? Okay. Self-encouragement to do the right thing. Okay? Is kind of the way I hear it coming through in the English. But what his desire to do, what his self-encouragement, his intention to do, okay, is to explain the hidden things. And I just think that's great. One of the things, and the many things, okay, that there is to love and appreciate about Jesus our King is how great of a teacher he is. You know, there in John 13, and it should be something to aspire to, okay? But in John 13 there, he washes the disciples' feet, and he says, if I, your teacher, have done this, then you ought to do the same. Okay? And so, you know, Jesus really highlighting that the teacher can serve, but he calls himself a teacher. Right? And so if we're to conform into the image of the Son, then we should desire to be good teachers. Okay? Now, James warns us, be slow to be a teacher of the brethren, because in so doing, you'll incur a stricter judgment. But, we have people, you know, whether we're married or have kids or not, that are in our sphere of influence that we can lead. Okay? Jesus was a great teacher. And if we desire to walk in his footsteps and to conform into his image and his example, then we ought to desire to be the best teachers that we can be as well. And I just think that's really cool because Jesus was an amazing teacher. And his desire, these are his words, his desire was to be able to explain things that are hidden, that are unknown. And he was able to do that. And he largely used parables to do that. But when you're reading through the scriptures and you're growing in the grace and knowledge of Jesus Christ, man, he is a phenomenal, he is the perfect teacher. And it's something that he desires to do. I love questions. I love answering questions if I know how to answer it. You know, and I think that's something that I appreciate that about that God does as well. Okay. So let's get to the parable section here. Let's consider parables here for a moment. I'll ask you guys, what is a parable? If someone asked you, maybe your kiddo asked, maybe your coworker, how would you describe that?
It's an earthly story with spiritual meaning.
Okay, Larry says an earthly story with a spiritual meaning. Okay. Anybody got a different definition or... the way they go about it. That's the one I think of. Yeah. Jesus used that quite a bit. Let's go to Matthew 13 here. So if we look at verse 3. Okay, he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, "Behold, a sower went out to sow. Some seed falls along." Okay, that's the parable. Okay, we understand it really well. So that's, some's going to fall on the rocky places, the weeds, the road, and the good soil, and it's going to come up, and then he explains this later in the chapter. So at the very end of that, at least in the beginning dissertation of this parable, in verse 9, he says, "He who has ears, let him hear." Now, that's a pretty common saying in the New Testament, and it's very commonly connected to when Jesus is teaching, but it's going to fit into what he says next. So in verse 10, his disciples came to him and said, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" Jesus answered them, "To you it has been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been granted. For whoever has, to him more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has shall be taken away from him. Therefore, I speak to them in parables, because while seeing, they do not see. While hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. In their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled, which says, 'You will keep on hearing, but will not understand. You will keep on seeing, but will not perceive, for the heart of this people has become dull. With their ears, they scarcely hear. They have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they would see with their eyes, hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and return, and I would heal them.'" He says, "Blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For truly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, to hear what you hear and did not hear it." They ask him, why do you speak to them in parables? Okay. Well, parables have a very powerful way of taking the substance of spiritual things and making them understandable to the spiritually discerned. They also have a way of taking spiritual things and making them make no sense to someone who is physically discerned. Does that make sense? So I'll come back to this, but you know, he says, you know, in verse 13, "I speak because they're looking, but they ain't seeing. They're hearing, but they're not really hearing." Okay? And so he tells us this fulfills a prophecy of Isaiah. Now look at this. In verse 15, he says, "The heart of the people has become dull. With their eyes, with their ears, they scarcely hear." Why do you suppose that is?
They don't want to hear. They have preconceived ideas.
What's that?
They have preconceived ideas. Yeah. They don't want to hear.
Yeah. They got their ears plugged. Man, I don't remember where this was, but it's about the funniest thing that Ethan's done in 2 years. But he's sitting across, I think we were at dinner. He's sitting across the table from me and he just plugs his fingers in his ears. So I'm talking to him and as soon as I see those fingers go in, I go, "Hey buddy, hi." And he'd pull him out, "Oh," and I'd keep telling my story and I was over-exaggerating. Because I could tell for the first time, I've never seen him do this before. Okay, like actually experiencing the world with his fingers in his ears. He's like, "Whoa." And so every time he'd stick them in there, I would keep talking, but I wouldn't be saying anything. So it would be like, "Wow, like I really was tuning Dad out." Okay. And so, you know, he looked pretty perplexed for a while there. And then of course, you know what he did after that then. He'd stuck them in and then half pulled them out. And he'd think I didn't notice. Because he's trying to check me out. He's like, "Dad, is this really working?" Okay. But that's what, they got ears, but they're not listening. You see how Jesus ends so many of these. He who's got ears, let him hear. Let him hear. Well, we all got ears, so why aren't we all, you know, why isn't the whole world repenting? Because they're not listening. Now, whether it's a preconceived notion, whether it's the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the boastful pride of life, okay, they're not listening. They can't see because they got their eyeballs closed. And you leave those eyes closed long enough, and you plug off those ears long enough, and that heart grows dull. You know, if you'd open these things up and get your earplugs out of your ears, you could hear the words of Jesus Christ. He'll heal you. You repent and you return to Him, He can bring you eternal salvation. Okay, so that's where the parables come in. Okay, you're there for a meal. Did Jesus accuse people of being there for a meal? He says, you're not here because of the preaching. He says, you're here because your bellies were filled. And you're looking for more. He says, if you're there for a meal, and he starts talking about dragnets being cast into the sea and fish are being pulled up, you know, and you're talking to your wife, you're not really paying attention, and all the kids doing something cute, you know, and you look up, and all of a sudden Jesus is talking about tossing out the bad fish. You're like, yeah, I toss out. Okay, boom, right over your head. A parable has a way of taking a spiritual reality and having it fly over the faces of people who aren't paying attention. But to the spiritually discerned, to those whose ears are unplugged and whose eyes are open, and if they need help with extra eyesight, you know, they went down to the eye doctor, and they're interested in Jesus' words, man, the kingdom opens up for you. Because these parables teach us about the kingdom. So, the nature of parables thought be good to discuss for a moment here. Dark sayings of old, covered it. Okay. Stay in chapter 13, verse 33. Yeah. And then this is where Psalm 78 is going to be quoted in the New Testament, right here. Matthew 13. Verse 33, he spoke another parable to them. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in three pecks of flour until it was all leavened. All these things Jesus spoke to the crowds in parables, and he did not speak to them without a parable. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet, I will open my mouth in parables and utter the things hidden since the foundation of the world. So I just want to make sure we grab that again, because we were there in chapter 13. One more thing then, on the parables, chapter 25 here in Matthew, we might have to finish early tonight. Yeah, Lorenzo got a comment. Yeah, if you got comments, get those in. We don't have time tonight to jump into Psalm 69. I'm going to break your heart. We're going to wrap up early tonight. It's nice outside. Take your kids out there, you know, swing on the swings, you know, fellowship for a little bit. But if you have comments, we definitely have time for him. Lorenzo.
I thought it was interesting that in 35, it's like he says, this was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet. So it's almost like that's not the main reason why it was done that way. That's not the main reason why that was said in the Old Testament. And the reason why he said this was just to fulfill that. It was the foresight of God already. And so that I just thought that was kind of cool, because sometimes you see stuff like that and you're like, well, he didn't know why he said it back there, but we're just doing this now because he said that and we're going to fulfill that wish. You know, God, he knew, even, you know, obviously he's eternal, but that's one of the beauties of the scripture in my mind, is just the interconnecting of all of it. You know, even the messianic prophecies, but even the way, just the coherence of it all. And I think that is validation that it's true, because, you know, anybody who's trying to sell a lie, eventually they're going to get tripped up. But if it's true, then, you know, it's easy to recount the truth. So
it just reminds me of when we started the study, Lorenzo, and we were kind of talking about the nature of Messianic prophecy and why study Messianic prophecy and what are some things that we should get out of this other than being able to recognize maybe some more prophecies in the Old Testament. I mean, this really builds conviction and faith. The coherency of it, like you said. It's amazing. Well, it's because God started with the end in mind. Right? He saw the end. His people who could walk holy and blameless and dwelt with his spirit because of Jesus Christ. And then planted all of these things along the way that we're starting to unearth right now in this study. There's so many more, but we've just kind of narrowed down the ones that are prophetic in language toward, for Jesus. But they're in there, and that's to strengthen our faith. So that when, you know, when we struggle or even if we doubt, we got to get those doubts resolved. We can come back here, trust in God's salvation of us. Because we know his word is true and infallible. And he's proven it to us by sprinkling all these things throughout thousands of years, knowing that they were going to happen ahead of time. So, yeah.
I can say a component to not, you know, obviously they had their own agenda. They didn't want to listen why this is stated. But also what's there is, I think, well explained in verse 36. It says, you know, after he said the quote from Psalm 78, he says, then he left the multitudes, went to the house, and his disciples came to him saying, explain to us the parable of the tares of the field. When he said that the first time, he went on and explained this, the sower without anybody asking. But now they come to him and say, okay, what's this all about? You know, just like when he talked about the temple building, I tell you, not one stone will be left. Only certain guys went to him there and said, okay, explain this to me. So that's all part of the process, too, here is, are you interested enough to try and get an answer?
Yeah, and that's what, you know, just kind of made that, you know, to go with that comment, where they're amazing because, like, the door into the spiritual realm and even specifically the final point I want to make here, the kingdom of God, it just completely opens if you're willing to look and to ask the questions. But if you just thought the story was cool and maybe you were doing something else when you were listening, it's like, man, like the... And so they're one of Jesus' teaching tools that helps him separate the sheep from the goats. Yeah.
I think that was implied in the first.
Yeah.
Why do you speak to them in parables? I think that's their way of saying, and we don't understand this either.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going on there. Like, help me out.
Yeah. These guys were willing to look, and that's why he picked them, because he knew that they would. So, and that's why he lets them know these things they've been given to you. Okay, well, let's wrap up Matthew 25, and speaking of sheep and goats, verse 31, when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne, all the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another, as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left, and the king will say to those on his right, come. You who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. So, this kingdom, the body of Jesus Christ, his church, is something that's been prepared from the foundation of the world. And the majority of the parables, not all, the majority of the parables are teaching us about the structure and characteristics and nature of this kingdom. So, thought I'd throw that one in. That's pretty cool. The majority of these parables are about the kingdom. Clearly, the spiritual kingdom was in God's mind before he started the process of creation, but it was hidden from those in earlier times so that the Lord himself would be the one to begin bringing those things to light in the form of parables. So, it's cool. And where I think this kind of comes full circle is hopefully we've been noticing, because we started in Genesis, that these become more detailed as we go on and we get more and more of an unveiling of the picture of who the Messiah would be. And it starts really basic and simple. And we see his kingship and an allusion to his priesthood and his family and those things. And now we see here that he would be a teacher and that he would use parables to do that. And the majority of them are explaining the nature of the church. So it was something that he desired to do, and it was prophesied that he would do it. So hopefully that's something that excites you, and you remember the next time you're going through the parables of the kingdom. Kevin.
It also gives us an opportunity to understand the promises made in Genesis in reference to the warfare that was going to come. one kingdom versus another, obviously, as mentioned in Genesis 3, but also helps us to understand who and how the world was going to be blessed in that comment to Abraham. You know, in you all the families of the earth shall be. Well, it's through Christ and ultimately through the church and the proclamation of the gospel.
Yeah. Yep. Going back to that kingdom. It's been prepared, been given to you. Yeah. Closing comments. Okay, I did not expect that to take the whole hour. So we have Psalm 69 next. I will give us, I'm going to try to fit Psalm 69 and another psalm in next week. Because Psalm 69, it's interesting, there's a ton of New Testament references. I should say there's a bunch of, in Psalm 69, is referenced a bunch of times in the New Testament. But what's interesting about Psalm 69 is the way that the references are used. I mean, they're in the epistles, they're in the gospels, they're kind of scattered all throughout, and they all make different points. They all establish different and various spiritual truths. So we're going to do Psalm 69 with just a look at those, I'll say six times that it's referenced in the New Testament. We'll just look at those New Testament references and consider those, and then we'll move on. Versus kind of following the nature and the theme of the prophecy like we've been doing. And that was the best way, I thought, to fit Psalm 69 in, getting the whole thing. So, okay, well, we will wrap up there.